Welcome, people of the internet, to the Stew Pod, the Yahoo Sports Baseball Podcast. We have made it through the trade deadline. It's August. We are sizing things up for the postseason, or getting toward the postseason. So this week on the show, we are talking all about that. Chris, how are you doing, man? I know July was a busy month for all of us. You holding up well?
I'm well rested now after a busy week. Had a nice relaxing weekend.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. So this week on the show, we have Yahoo Sports' Tim Brown joining us. He's going to talk all about all the major storylines in MLB right now with us, and some other things like food and books and whatnot. I think it's going to be good. Chris and you and Tim don't know each other, so this is
that's
fun.
Correct. This yeah, and, the first time I talked to him,
and it's Tim's first ever podcast. So I feel like we're in some kind of like hallowed ground here this week.
Well, you just bring people together and unite them for new experiences. So that's the thing you do.
That is what happens. That's what we do on the Stew Pod. That's what we're all about. And so we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things right now. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome back to the Stew Pod, the Yahoo Sports Baseball Podcast. Chris and I are joined by our esteemed colleague, Tim Brown, one of Yahoo's MLB columnists. And we had Jeff Passan on the podcast a few weeks ago, and we're happy to bring in Tim. I think it's a good time to just talk about a number of subjects with the trade deadline just passed. Teams kind of, you know, tooling up for the postseason runs. So there's a lot of things with which we can discuss with Tim. He's, I guess, a little bit of background. Tim, you've been covering baseball like forever. How many years, Tim?
It's true. 89 was my first regular year on a beat. I took 5 years out to cover the Lakers for the Times during the Phil Shaq Kobe run. But other than that, it's been, I guess that's coming up on, 30 years of baseball.
Jeez. So Tim, I've been at games with him. I will say he seems like he knows everyone, knows everything. So lots of great insight, hopefully, from Tim Brown today. I want to start off by kind of just going back to the trade deadline a little bit, you guys. If you had to pick one, looking back, who made the best move?
I go with the Mets because not only the guys they got and how important they were, Cespedes in the middle of the lineup, Clifford near the end of the bullpen, the bench guys with Uribe and Johnson, but just because the culture there, the morale, the darkness that had descended upon Gotham as the Mets were trying to scrape together runs and losing games they shouldn't, and the notion, you know, remember the Gomez trade fall through and there was this great depression. And I think the Cespedes thing seems to have lifted the whole organization. You watch a game they played yesterday, and things start to go wrong. You can't get a bunt down. They're, again, scraping for a run. And all of a sudden, here they go. You know, I think they just believe in themselves, and I think it's really important. They're a team that's walking a different walk right now, just with a different guy in the lineup, just with a different guy at the end of that bullpen. I think it's pretty cool.
The power of Cespedes, man.
I think we talked about this a lot last week, Mike, but the Tulowitzki deal to me is still the big thing, not just, you know, because he's a great player, but also because he's under contract with them for a long time. And I don't want to rehash it too much, but that's kind of the first major deal of the deadline, and that still sticks out to me.
I think I agree with Tim on the Mets, but just to throw something else out there, I think that Carlos Gomez is also a very nice deal for the Astros in the sense too that they're going to have him for a while. So, you know, I think that one's going to pay dividends. But I certainly agree with Tim on the Mets. I feel like, and I said this last week, like how do you not go out and make, you know, a trade for a guy like Cespedes? And they went and did it in immediate dividends. Whether that, you know, stays all the way into October, I mean, we'll see. But immediately you got to enjoy the returns.
Well, the fan base had completely lost faith in the management there. You know, it was Panic City. There was this great depression, and I think this sort of energizes everything that's going on there. That's why I think it was so critical.
Well, what about I was gonna step all over you there. What about you know, these are kind of the major moves. What about something that we look back on in November as kind of a sneaky good pickup at this point? Was there anything that kind of stood out and impressed you in that way?
For me, it would be, I think, very sneaky, very under the radar, was Moss in St. Louis.
Yeah.
I like him as a guy on the bench. I like him as a guy in the clubhouse. He just seems to fit the sort of the Cardinal way. He's more athletic than you think he is. He's sort of funky. He's not exactly the platoony kind of guy. He hits lefties as good or better than he does righties. But I just like the way he carries himself. I think he's going to contribute there. He hasn't much yet. But I like that move, and that's such a Cardinal move. Very clever, very smart. You identify a guy and more than just what he brings to the field, which I think can be plenty. But I like that move.
I think, I mean, and of course it's the Cardinals, right? I mean, they this is the kind of stuff they do and why they're, you know, the team they are. But yeah. I also thought, aside from Brandon Moss, I feel like the Cishek deal could be really good for them too. You know, and again, didn't have to give up too much for that guy. And it could be one of those things where we look back in October and you're like, wow, that guy really helped them in the postseason. And you know, back in July, who cared? But
yeah, if he gets a right-hander or two in October, if he gets Puig in a big moment or something like that, it'll have paid for itself.
Chris, do you have one that stood out for you?
I've been kind of banging the Mike Leake drum. I know he's a little more established or maybe more well-known than those two guys, but I just kind of love that fit for him, getting out of the big home run park. And like Tim was saying, Moss being such a big Cardinals acquisition, Mike Leake feels like the quintessential Giant. Like, he's been there forever, and he's probably going to put up Cy Young numbers down the stretch just based on how much success they've had the last couple years and how good of a fit I think he is for that park.
And then we'll all look back, and actually we'll all look back and be like, oh, the Giants again. But one of the reasons that I think of this question, one of the moves I think of is that year the Giants got Marco Scudero. You know, and you're like, mm-hmm. Marco Scudero, not the big deal, but like, he fit them so perfect, and you know, really helped them, and so it's that kind of thing. And I think when we talk about the trade deadline, obviously it's nice to get the big splashy guys, but you know, sometimes what really helps your team in the long run is that guy who just really fits. And I think that brings us to two teams that I think are just right now this week the biggest headlines in baseball as the revived teams, the Blue Jays and the Mets. And they've both made big moves. We talked about the Mets. We kind of talked about the Blue Jays, but in addition to Troy Tulowitzki, they got David Price. And you know, they added some bullpen help in the Troy Hawkins. Who they got? Oh, Ben Revere. That's the other one I'm thinking. So they added some players. Of those two teams, guys, who are you buying right now more?
You talking about through October?
Yeah, like which one of those teams do you think is for real? Not right now, but this season into the postseason.
I like the Blue Jays. I know they're coming from a ways back. I wrote a little bit about this earlier this week, where I almost feel like in that race now, 5.5 games between the Yankees and the Blue Jays, I feel like the Yankees are the underdog in that thing. You know, they're like the staggered start and track or something, where the Blue Jays now are the better team. And can the Yankees hold on? All this stuff that's going on with the Yankees, is this for real? You know, is this really A-Rod? Is Teixeira really not washed up? You know, can Tanaka hold on? All these things that shouldn't be happening with the Yankees have happened for 4 months. I just feel like the Blue Jays are primed. I think they could run them down. I really love what they've done.
Let's bang that drum. I am also on that. I've been on that Blue Jays train for like 3 years, though. So hopefully this is the year it actually happens. I feel like there's going to be so much disappointment, you know, in general, like if they falter again. But I'm with you, man. I think we saw how good David Price could be. I think just that lineup, you look at it, I mean, it was ridiculous before Tulowitzki, and now it's like, oh, man, it just looks so good. Chris, are you joining us, or are you Mets?
Yeah. No, I have nothing to add. I mean,
yes.
Tim pretty much said exactly what I've been saying this whole week, so I'm all in on the Blue Jays. I've been watching them a ton this year, too, so it's kind of been really fun to follow them along and to see all these moves get made.
By proxy,
and to still kind of be following, you know?
By proxy, I will say that Ian and Israel both agree with us as our Yahoo candidate.
Yeah,
I didn't even ask him, but I'm just saying that they do. Our other two of our big league writers in Canada, I know they're down for the cause.
How about that the atmosphere Sunday up at Rogers Center with Price and you know, I mean, remember those days from the early 90s where it felt like when you walked in there, it was legit. And it's been 20 years since you felt that way about going to Toronto. And so, you know, for the last, certainly the last 15 or so, it's been dead up there. You know, there is nothing. And now I think that these guys who drag in some energy, some people lining up to go see the Jays play again, I know not as many people are going to see the Twins the last couple of days, but I think it's pretty freaking cool. Well, maybe Price was Monday, I think. Price was Monday.
Yeah,
but you could say the same thing about the Mets on Sunday. Their fans went nuts during that Nationals game, and that was pretty fun to see, too.
I think, to me, the overarching thing, and I liked this last week, and to me, it's like, if you're going for it, like, I just love it. You know, like, pony up, go all in, like let's do it. And you know, no matter what happens, you know, maybe the Blue Jays and the Mets both disappoint us, but I have to appreciate the gusto and I have to appreciate the drama of it. I mean, you know us, we're not necessarily pulling for one team or another. We're just looking at the overall things that happen, and just from the drama and for what's at stake, like I love it when teams do like what the Blue Jays did.
Well,
and there's really nothing better than watching it. Like a Royals team come from nowhere and go deep in October, and just the way it turns the whole city around, that stuff, that's what's cool about October for me.
All right, well, what about another team that we haven't really talked about that did seem to go all in? The Astros. Seems like they kind of fit that Royals narrative, team that comes out of nowhere, wins a little before everyone expects, and is now poised to try and make a deep playoff run. Tim, do you think that this is a team with real World Series aspirations at this point, or are you still a little skeptical?
It is, because nobody saw the Giants coming, and they did it three times. Nobody saw the Red Sox going last to first in 2013. I think they're legit because baseball allows for them to be legit. It's the kind of game where you get hot, and things change, and I think, you know, the Royals obviously 90 feet from glory last October, and the same thing could hit. Look, do I see them lining up with the Royals? Can they pitch with the Royals? You know, can they, if they do get to the World Series, are they as good as the Cardinals or the Dodgers or whoever? I don't know. You know, are they as good as the Blue Jays right now? I don't know. But I do know that teams can get hot and teams can get really good. And you lead out with Keuchel and Kazmir and McHugh. You know, I think it's certainly possible. You know, they can hit. It seems like it'll be interesting to see when it gets very big in late September and early October if the Angels hang with them. There's an awful lot of young guys who haven't gone through this sort of thing before. You know, do they survive the big moment? But only because we keep seeing it. We keep seeing teams that haven't been there before who grow out of nothing and win it. So, you know, last September, you go through the Giants clubhouse and nobody thought that team had a shot. Not even close. They wondered if they were going to make the playoffs. They're just not very good this year. Bang. It happens. You know, you ride a big guy and it happens. I think certainly it's in the Astros' talent. They do have the talent for it.
I've also been big on the Astros this year because I love the underdog. I love, you know, kind of surpassing expectations. But I do wonder, you know, if they have enough. And to any Royals fans out there listening, I guess the unsaid part of this is we do think the Royals are pretty much the favorite in the AL at this point. So the question we're asking is, can they beat the Royals? I know the Royals fans, it seems like, just can never get enough affirmation. So that is the unsaid context here, or I guess now the said context. Yes, you guys are good. So can the Astros beat them? And I mean, Tim, you asked the question. I think the thing with the Astros is, like, to me, they're they could go really, really poor. You know, they could all of a sudden, you know, just start striking out like crazy and not hitting home runs. The pitching, the young guys could not come through. So I guess that's what I worry about with them. Like they've been running on like best case scenario for a while. So I just worry that they're gonna like bottom out at the wrong time and it could really hurt them.
I feel like the one area
they'll get a big closer.
Yeah,
they
got Kimbrel.
Something. Kimbrel, yeah. Chapman, something. That to me was pretty important. And they can still go get K-Rod now. I'm sure he's one of those guys that could clear waivers. There's still a possibility to do that, but I would have liked to have seen him do that.
I kind of feel like the one area they could maybe top the Royals in a series would be in that rotation, because aside from Cueto, I feel like the Astros have the better two, the better three. If you want to put Lance McCullers Jr. in that conversation, he's been really great, so... I'm buying like you guys are, because I feel like they might be the second best team in the American League, and kind of like Tim said, in a short series, really anything can happen. And I think, you know, part of the Giants' dominance the last couple years has been the pitching. So if those Astros guys can get hot, who knows?
We've made it this far, which probably about 15 minutes or so, and we have not yet spoke of the Washington Nationals, which I think is sort of weird considering all the hype and how good they were. But they've kind of fallen back recently. They're right now at this moment, they wouldn't make the playoffs. For all the talent, all the hype, everything, should we be worried about them, or is this just kind of a right now thing?
What do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm not worried. I still think this is a playoff team, but I just have a lot less confidence about it than I did in March and April. You know, I think part of the problem is a lot of their guys were injured the whole first half. Rendon missed a ton of games. Jason Worth, Ryan Zimmerman. All those guys are finally back, and that should make me feel good about it, but I think there are a lot more concerns about, especially Zimmerman and Worth at this point. You know, are they going to hit? Worth is getting up there in age, and you know, you don't expect much production from guys who are, I think he's 35 or 36. Zimmerman has been dealing with these kind of lingering injuries for a while, so that's a concern for me. And then, you know, Strasburg is hurt too. He's on his way back. But I just have a lot more concerns than I did. So I still feel like they're a playoff team, but I don't know. I'm afraid. I'm a little afraid.
You know, I think that we talk about these teams where the parts add up to more than you think they should. The Giants are one. You know, I think the last few years we look at the Orioles and think, wow, they're winning more than you think they should. Even the Cardinals are sort of a team like that. The Nationals are the opposite. The Nationals, their end product is never as big as you think, you know, the sum of their parts should be. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if Matt Williams isn't reaching them, if there are personalities on the team that aren't capable of sort of running through 180 games or whatever, but they're just not as good as you think they ought to be. And this is 2-3 years running now, at least. And I'm not sure what the issue is. Maybe it's personality, maybe it's leadership, but I am concerned about them, and I wonder what's going on. I wonder why they can't live up to that end-to-end talent they have on that roster.
I want to throw a couple teams at you, Tim, that you probably know better than most. The LA teams, you're in SoCal. I know you see them a lot. The Dodgers, of course, are for as much as we haven't really talked about them. I mean, they're in first place. They're doing their thing. I don't think they've been as impressive, maybe, as some people expected. And then you got the Angels, who, you know, now, right now they'd be a wild card team. They're facing the Astros in the West. Which of those teams do you think has a stronger fate at the end of the season?
Well, I think the Dodgers for sure. I think just because you can line up Kershaw, Greinke, Latos, Wood. I mean, they're deep enough. I think that the veteran lineup, I think, will produce. They haven't really, offensively, they've gone sort of cold the last month or so. The Angels, they don't have the depth in the rotation, and they just get so Trout, Pujols-centric in their offense. And when these guys don't hit, they just fall off the face of the earth. I just think they're sort of an imbalanced team right now, and I think that's a big issue when you're relying on, you know, you just look at their moves at the deadline with the, you know, Victorino, DeJesus, Murphy, and while I sort of like the notion of it, look, we don't want to go spend all our prospects to go get one of these studs, you know, and basically they got DeJesus, Victorino, and Murphy for Josh Hamilton, if you want to think of it that way. But I just, you know, I mean, when you're, their lineup just does nothing for me. You know, the Gillespies and Giovitellas and Ionetta's done nothing. You know, Calhoun's been okay. The Ibar's had sort of a down year. I just, you know, if Trout and Pujols don't lug them along, then they don't win. They don't score and they don't win. And that's an issue.
Chris, where are you on the LA teams?
I agree. The Dodgers, you know, are probably the better team in my mind. The other thing that worries me a lot about the Angels is the loss of C.J. Wilson. Well, the probable loss. I guess we're not really sure what's going on there, but I kind of doubt that he's going to come back and pitch for them. And, you know, Tim was saying that rotation was a big concern for me at the beginning of the year, and Wilson pitched pretty well, and so losing him, I just feel like it just makes it so much tougher for them to get back into this race with the Astros. So yeah, I'm supporting the Dodgers at this point over the Angels as far as which team is going to go further and make the biggest noise in October.
To echo what I said earlier, I just don't get the Angels kind of not going for it. I mean, I agree with Tim in the sense that I see what they're trying to do, but I mean, go out there and do something. I mean, the Astros did, you know, go and make a bigger move. And you know, I guess, yeah, long term, I mean, you have Trout for many years, but I don't know. I just kind of feel like the chance to win is so, you know, so the window is so tight. I mean, look at the Mets. The Mets at least are going for it. The Blue Jays are going for it. I was just disappointed in the Angels. And the Dodgers, you know, I still worry about them. I picked them to go to the World Series, and I think I'm going to stay with that just because I feel like they haven't been great, but they just kind of keep winning and you know, it's kind of silently being good, not getting as much attention as everybody else, which is kind of strange considering they're the Dodgers and they spend all this money. But I kind of feel like they're one of those teams that is just going to come on at the right moment and like Tim said, you know, kind of get hot in the postseason. And I can see them just, you know, kind of hitting that and being wonderful down the stretch.
I think now that
they had to circle back on October, and I think it's sort of like almost like a franchise-wide mindset. I think Kershaw started out slow because what he has left to prove is October.
Yeah.
And it's a long way back to October. And I think, you know, once he sort of got back into the groove of the season, I probably stopped thinking about that. I think the Dodgers are the same way. This is a team that needs to prove itself in October. And it's hard to get there again when you feel like the season doesn't start till October 2nd. So I think that's the team I keep seeing, that sort of unevenness is sort of getting comfortable with, okay, you got to play yourself all 6 months all the way back to where they felt like they should have been last year.
I feel like with Mike digging up his predictions there, I feel like we can maybe talk a little bit about some of the things we maybe said earlier in the season that maybe don't apply. So, Tim, I wanted to ask you if there was a first half prediction you made and you just wanted a clean slate on it, what would that be? And I'll put myself out there first. I predicted the Yankees to finish last in the East, so that I have to live with that every day the rest of this season.
You know, I think the one that jumps to mind is that, you know, the Tigers win the division because I feel like, you know, you got to keep picking the Tigers until somebody knocks them off, and they've been knocked off. So I guess I would go with that.
I shamed myself already when we did this in the Stew post on the Royals, so I won't shame myself there. But I will say I, like many people, picked the Marlins to make it to the playoffs, and that's one that obviously is a train wreck. So I will own up there. I had such high hopes for the Marlins this year, hoping that they could come out and prove us all wrong. But instead, they proved us all right, that we have every reason to think they're, you know, just a poorly run franchise.
Yeah.
As we look forward now at kind of the next chapter of this, both the wild card races are, you know, plenty of teams involved still. A lot of divisions are still relatively up for grabs. If you guys look at the standings right now, especially in the American League, I mean, there's a ton of teams that are within striking distance for the wild card. Which team right now that would not be in the playoffs do you think will be once we get there?
Chris?
All right. Well, I'm looking at the wild card standings as we speak. And, it's a cop-out to say the Giants or the Nationals, but those are really the only two teams I feel great about. The AL is a lot more interesting, but I just don't know that I can trust the Orioles or the Twins. Tampa Bay is you know, only two games back of the wild card. I feel like that's kind of a big surprise. But I don't know. I can't. If I had to trust one of those three teams, it would probably be the Orioles. But again, I feel kind of awful about that.
Rangers only two back, Chris. Come on. They got
that's
cool
true.
Handles now.
That's true.
That's my squad. That is my squad. I know they still can't pitch, but now Hamels, Gallardo is finally pitching like they all hoped he might one day in Milwaukee. And that's probably the best offensive team in the American League right now. And I keep looking at them and keep wondering why they're hanging around and why they're there still. And here they are. And I, you know what? They might actually make a run at it. That's a fascinating team for me.
All right, so you
and I know that they can't pitch. They can't miss. Their ERA after the break is 6, but they keep winning games. I can't figure it out, but that's an interesting team.
Tim Brown on record for the Rangers. I like it. I like the bold picks. I would have to go with the Nats. I mean, I know we kind of hit on that, but I feel like, you know, if we're placing bets, they're probably the team. And apologies to the Giants. The Giants are half a game out, but. I think I'm going with the Nats there. I'm not going with the Padres, by the way, for any AJ Prellers out there listening. I do not think you're a playoff team. So. All right, I think we made it through our postseason stuff. Tim, we do a segment on the Stew Pod where we ask people very important questions. And by important, I mean they are not at all important at all. But hopefully they're fun. So... actually, Chris, I'm going to let you ask the first one because I want to ask the second one.
All right. Well, yep. Tim, we know you've done some traveling with the job. I'm wondering what your favorite place to eat is on the road.
My favorite place to eat, you know, I don't even, I always stay at the Upper East Side Courtyard in Manhattan, which is a lovely little place. But there's a little Italian joint right around the corner called Piccolo's. And... I live here in Venice, and for whatever reason, we've got all these great restaurants. What we don't have is a great old-style Italian place. And so whenever I go to New York, I go to this little, like, 8-table Italian place called Piccolo's, and I think that's my favorite place.
Tim knows, I will verify that Tim knows some of the little tiny Italian spots. He took me to a place in San Francisco a couple times. It was really good.
That's right, Sodini.
Yeah,
Sodini's.
Yeah.
That was that's a big-time spot for me as well.
Tim, also, last year during the postseason, we went to a place in San Francisco and we had broccoli on pizza, which I never ever had broccoli on pizza.
Yeah, that was a big mistake.
This is a question.
Nobody likes deep dish pizza.
Both of you guys can answer this one, and maybe Tim, this is your answer. But what's the weirdest thing you've ever had on pizza?
Gosh. I've had everything on pizza. I don't consider any of it weird. Can I answer that? I think pizza, you could put any, it's none of it. It's all in play. It's all, you're all game for everything, aren't you?
Chris, what's the weirdest thing you've had on pizza?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe Spam, just because Spam is a weird thing in general. So that's what I would go with.
All right. Tim, I have one more for you. And then I think Chris may have some more. But in the interest of Yahoo camaraderie, I'm wondering, do you think if I gave you a baseball and I gave Jeff Passan a bat, could you strike him out?
Every time. Every time.
I like it.
Even with like 20 years separating us. Still. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
So, Tim, you said... the first time you were on the beat was 89. You've obviously covered a ton of players. I'm wondering if you have any favorites that kind of stick out from over the years.
Well, I mean, the obvious one, I did a book with Jim Abbott, came out a few years ago, and 89 happened to be his rookie year. And I was so struck, not just by what he could do on a field, but also what he meant to so many people. And it wasn't even so much, I mean, we'd go to these towns and the kids would line up and they would all be, you know, need something in some way, challenged in some way. But I would always look at the parents who, they were the ones who needed to know that their child was going to grow up and be okay and go to a prom and be loved and feel good about himself. And so it was really sort of easy to fall for a guy like Jim Abbott, very sort of a special guy for me. So I would go with him. But I mean, there have been a bunch over the years that I mean, right now, a guy that I really like, I've done a few stories on him, is Chris Archer. I mean, I think this guy is really special, has his act together, is very talented, and sort of symbolizes where the game is going. You know, just a smart guy from an interesting background who has it together. And I like those guys who appreciate not only the game, but their place in it and their place in the world and make something of it. So, you know, I'll go 89 to 2015. Those are two guys that have stood out for me so far.
I got one more that I just kind of came up with because you talked about your book. I know you read a lot too. What is something, sports or non-sports, that you've read recently that you think people should read?
Let's see. That's a great question. I'm working through a Michael Chabon book right now that I really like. With the comic books, it's kind of a funky name. I read Bill Bryson's book about the universe, which in the last few months, which I thought was fascinating. I mean, it makes you feel like, you know, just a pebble on the beach. Like, you know, it just occurs to you, holy cow, you're here for a heartbeat and gone. So I did enjoy that. You know, those are the two that stand out lately. I like to read stuff of non-sports stuff during the season because you get enough sports. I will say that one of my favorite books ever was The Art of Fielding, and if people haven't read that book, you know, that was a book I read and thought, dang, this is the one I wish I had written this book, because that was really a terrific book.
Tim Brown is a well-rounded gentleman, people, just so you know. Well-rounded gentleman. Thank you, Tim, for joining us. Follow him on Twitter, tbrownyahoo. Read all of his stories because they're always good. Especially if you, I think, Tim, and I, not to be too complimentary or fawning over you here, but I enjoy your articles because I think you have a certain voice and a certain delicacy the way you approach subjects sometimes that I think is, you know, maybe been lost, I think, some in the internet age where everything is so rough and you know, everyone is, I think, trying so hard to be, to drop that, you know, oh my God, that sentence or whatever. I feel like you approach things in a different way, and I just enjoy reading you. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. It was fun.
Thanks for being here, Tim. And we didn't mention, this was your first ever podcast.
It is my debut.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I probably talked way too much, but,
all right,
you know, that's my heavy-handed style that you were just mentioning.
Well, review us on iTunes then. Yeah. That's a joke. You don't have to. Thanks, Tim.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great day.
All right, bye. Hey, we're back on the Stew Pod. Chris, last weekend I went up to the Bay Area, did the little road trip thing with my wife and the kids, went to the A's game, which was fun. I like going to the A's games. It reminds me of when I was a kid, and like I take Bart, and I know a lot of people hate the A's stadium, but I like it. Non-baseball thing here, and this is sort of your question to me a couple weeks ago about the franchise four of food.
Right.
I'll be thinking of this one. So I'm kind of, this is the sequel inspired by your question, throwing it back at you. Because, of course, when we're on the road, we're kind of going through, like, these little towns, and we had to all figure out where we wanted to go for lunch, you know, and it's all just, you know, all fast food everywhere. And, you know, we have this conversation. It's like, oh, well, I kind of want this or I kind of want that. I mean, everybody's done this before. So, Chris, if you had to choose, what is your ideal, like, dream fast food value meal, i.e., you can pick one thing from this place, one thing from that place, one thing from
Ooh.
This place. So, like, an entree, fries, etc. Like, what is your dream team of fast food value meal?
I love it. Great question.
I know, right?
I don't see. I'm gonna offend so many people by doing this. So that's why you did this, so that I would get in trouble. I would probably take. I'd still take a burger from In-N-Out. And now everyone's going to get mad about that. Fries would
why?
Have to be
why, why would people get mad at that?
Because everybody's like, oh, so overrated. I'd rather have Five Guys. And Five Guys is great. I love Five Guys. You know, maybe it's just that I don't get In-N-Out as much because I live in a place where it doesn't exist. But that's going to happen. There's going to be comments. I guarantee it.
Okay, all right.
French fries from McDonald's because they're the best. And... I'm trying to think of a good shake place. You know, am I doing this right? Am I?
Yeah, you're.
Want to make sure. You know, I want to make sure I've got all the essential parts of the meal.
If you want to get gangster with it, you could be like, you want a certain sort of. You can get a certain sort of sauce. I mean, if you want, you know, you can get.
Oh man.
You could do like that.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. You're just taking this to another level now. I can't think of a good place to get a shake. I mean, there's something about the mystery and the magic of the McDonald's Coke, where like it always just tastes better than any other Coke.
I was going to bring that out. Why is that the case? But it's true.
Yeah, it is true. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm being lame, but I like the In-N-Out shakes. So now my meal is just from two places only, and I feel like I haven't properly used this power to my advantage.
Ah, okay. Well, just something to throw out there, man. I'm a fan of the one fact you may not know about me. I'm not a huge fan of hamburgers, and I'll eat burgers. I mean, I'll go to In-N-Out. It's fine.
Well, that's gonna get comments now.
And I guess the embarrassment of riches being that like there's an In-N-Out like literally 2 minutes from my house, and I think I've been there once, you know, like, I don't really care. Like, we have Five Guys. I've been there once. I don't really care. So I enjoy, and again, maybe some people might feel the opposite. Like, we don't really have Chick-fil-A here. So we have, like, one Chick-fil-A. Actually, we have two now. But I'm a big fan of the Chick-fil-A spicy chicken sandwich. To me, like, oh, that's the crack right there. But I hate Chick-fil-A fries. Like, they're not very good. So I would go with the Chick-fil-A sandwich, and then I would go with, like, maybe a... I like the Carl's Jr. crisp cut fries.
I feel like you could maybe also go with the Arby's curly fries. I don't know if you're a big fan of those, but I kind of love those.
I kind of like Carl's Jr. curly fries better than Arby's curly
fries. Wow, okay. All right. I don't know that I've ever been to a Carl's Jr., actually.
Oh, excuse me. No. Sorry. Jack in the Box. I like Jack in the Box curly fries better than Arby's curly fries.
And I've never been to a Jack in the Box either.
Oh.
There's one close to us.
All this regionalism here where not everybody has the same thing.
But. Well, man, I was going to say, I mean, if you want to throw Chicago's own Portillo's in there, which I don't think is fair because it's not really national. I think Portillo's is in Chicago and maybe Arizona, so that doesn't really count.
No.
But get a beef sandwich from there and you are in good shape.
I think the question is, like, who has national commercials, you know? I
mean, right.
Carl's Jr., Taco Bell, you know.
I mean, I'm just trying to inject some, you know, difference in there.
You're trying to bring in your Chicago stuff.
I know. I'm trying to get too specific.
Yeah. And, I guess I'd say we hit on that. McDonald's Coke is better than all the Cokes.
I got to say, though, if I'm drunk, the equation changes a little bit. And I often get a taste for a chalupa.
Okay. Right.
So that's something that happens.
Well, I live in Fresno, California. where we're having a taco truck throwdown tomorrow.
Right. And, you don't need any of the taco.
And if we need late night food, we just go to the side of the road and find a taco stand.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's how we roll. But anyways, good topic. I kind of think about that one. Do you have a friend or have you ever thought of the ideal buffet would be like a buffet where you just had all the different fast food places. You just pick whatever you want. I have a friend who swears that's the greatest idea ever.
That sounds awful to me. I think I would be in a food coma for weeks.
But you could just go and you can actually have this. You could be like, oh, I want this McDonald's fries and I want that. I have a friend who swears that's just the greatest idea. And then, but me, I'm like, oh, that would never work because, you know, there are all these different corporations and they don't like each other and blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, you could have, you know, all the Taco Bell, KFC, you know, you can have all those people together and all the other people. But now we're just going off the rails.
Ooh, see, yeah. I feel like this segment's been long enough, but I mean, KFC mashed potatoes and gravy. Those are like drugs to me. I would put that aside. I'm putting that next to the fries.
There you go. Well, you can. I didn't say you had to have one. You could double.
Right.
Up.
Well, we're gonna go starchy.
All right. Well, please continue this debate in the comment section. Head over to our iTunes and give us a nice review. And tell your friends, retweet us, pass it along. This has been the Stew Pod. Say bye, Chris.
Bye, everybody.
I get spent if I do get spent if I don't. So sometimes I will and sometimes I won't. Both mad, stink, crack a 40 down the back, sit fat and relax and plan my attack. Not the one to test, I possess mad finesse. My boot, I was blessed, one bird in the nest. Chills with my beeps, steady bouncing.